with digital mixing and engineering by Joe Waters at the VoiceOver House. I'm James DePriest.
I hope you enjoyed this visit to my audio archives today. Till next time, I'm Dime Roberts, stage and studio.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Andy Whoa, looks a scream. Hand him on my whoa. Andy Whoa, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You are listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is painter Sienna from Sienna Art Studios. We're here in her studio at Workshop St. John's, which was also known as Cathedral Park Place. It's in St. John's by the park. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus, Sienna.
Thank you for having me.
You have a distinctive style, which I think many people have seen around town. It used to be at Saturday Market. What you do is you paint and you draw on the canvas, and when you look into the image, so in this case a pine tree with a human figure hidden in it, all the black marks are numbers and letters.
That's right.
And that's what draws people in. It's like, oh, there's a code involved in this image. What do you call your system, your style? And let's talk about this one piece, which is so well known of yours.
So I call my technique numberism. It's similar to pointillism or stippling, where you draw entirely with dots. Most of it is scientific in nature. This piece that we're looking at is called forest bathing. It comes from the Japanese word shinrin-yoku, and that's the act of immersing yourself in nature for health benefits. It's drawn with a chemical formula for alpha-pinene and geosmin. So alpha-pinene is something that conifers release, and they found that when you breathe that in for 20 minutes, it decreases your cortisol levels, which is a stress hormone. So it reduces anxiety. This is something that I have personally experienced, and I use quite a lot for my own anxiety treatment, and was validating to find that there's science behind it, is to remind us to go into nature and be well. It also has a chemical formula for geosmin, which is important in the smell of dirt or in the smell of summer rain, which for me I find to be really calming.
We're looking at a print which is 2 foot by 4 foot, sort of a tall rectangle. There's a light blue background which fades to white, and then the real focal point is a tree, a single conifer. And then it spreads out, and where the roots are, I feel like it's a cross section, so we're looking underground. That's where most of the writing is. Kind of looks like a giant beard or a root system. And then at the very bottom, in a white space that's created by just not writing, is the shape of a human with their arms out wide. They could be wearing a sort of flowing garment. This piece is about getting out there and breathing and sort of calming yourself down. What's the relation between the figure and the tree?
This is how it feels for me when I'm in nature and feeling the experience of forest bathing. So when you are washed with it and feeling like you're connected to it and one with it. And that's the experience I'm trying to share with people, and hopefully to inspire them to go reintroduce themselves to nature and remember that we are nature, and we are most well when we are in it and near it. One of the best things about it is that it works even if you don't want it to. So when you're struggling with anxiety and depression and parts of your brain argue against actually being well, when you spend time in the forest, it does the work for you. So you get relief regardless.
Where do you go?
I go to Forest Park a lot. It's one of the reasons I live in St. John's, is it's right across the bridge for me. I actually have some of my favorite trails are also drawn in forest bathing from Forest Park and the Gorge.
Which trails do you use in Forest Park?
Oh, my favorite one is Germantown Road. I go there all the time. It's a great loop to bring someone on because you can go for 2 miles or 5 miles or 6 miles or 8 miles.
Your style in forest bathing, the letters are quite big. They get bigger towards the edge. But you have another piece, a heart, And it's incredibly detailed. I mean, you really do need a magnifying glass to see what's going on. So it's an anatomical drawing of a heart. And it's got that, it's because it has that kind of golden background, you know, it looks like a vintage, like sort of a Leonardo drawing. And even there's a sort of staining, water staining effect. But it's an anatomical heart with the chambers visible and the arteries, and then the colors change where the words change. Tell us a little bit about the actual things you're writing in there.
So the heart is the first piece I created in my anatomical series. It was a commission for a cardiologist, and it's drawn with cardiac equations. So in the main body, it's stroke volume, I have ejection fraction, the aorta is cardiac output. I have oxygen difference in the superior and inferior vena cava, a chemical formula for norepinephrine in the great coronary vein, oxygen content in the pulmonary veins, and then in the revealed right atrium, we have the beginning of the electrical system of the heart. The atrioventricular node, which is that guy right there, is average firing rate, and the sinal atrial node is drawn with membrane potential. All of my pieces come with a description of the numbers and equations I draw them with, so you don't have to memorize them, nor is it meant to be a mystery. I'm looking to share with people the underlying scientific story in each piece so you can carry it with you and hopefully be inspired to go learn more about it yourself.
Some of these formulas, for instance, it says SVIEDV over and over coming out of this part of the heart.
So it's an ejection fraction equals stroke volume divided by end diastolic volume.
And then when we get down here, it's illegible to me because it's so small. What's going on there?
This is the average firing rate for the atrial ventricular node. So it slows down the signals that are coming in from the sinoatrial node, which are quite fast, and it'd be too fast for the heart to maintain.
So when you come up with a concept, so you're going to do a heart and you're going to get all the relevant formulae to fill in the information in the heart, to make the picture. Where do you go to get those formulae?
So I use the internet extensively. I have learned a lot from YouTube. I also use open source courseware. I read a lot of research papers, and then I pull together what I think is the most evocative numbers and equations. And so there's a lot of science that I learn about that doesn't go into a piece. I share the equations that I think are the most effective and that communicate. And so they're the secret stories about the subject that another human will feel like they've learned something and connected to the subject more. So it's kind of visceral and emotional.
If you look at two equations that are relevant to one, say one ventricle, and you look at them, they're different, but one, does one have a more pleasing aesthetic look? Numbers, letters, symbols, and do you pick that one?
Yes. So there's more than one thing I consider as a numberism artist. There's choosing equations that speak for the piece, and there's choosing equations that become good gradients. When you're creating a gradient off of dots, for instance, for stippling, it's all really consistent, it's the same. Letters and regular numbers also, they occupy the same space. They have relative like negative space, but an equation can often be really top heavy or bottom heavy, or have like a lot on the left side and very little long drawn out on the right side, which is relevant mathematically, but it is really choppy and difficult to create a nice smooth pattern with. And so if I can find an equation that occupies this nice little space together that says the same thing, I'll use that equation instead. I tend to use chemical formulas a lot because they do that as well. And I think they have a lot of, they communicate a lot. Number sequences and chemical formulas I have a preference for. That actually comes important with Schrodinger's cat. So Schrodinger's cat was my first scientific drawing I did, and this is drawn with Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, not Schrodinger's wave collapse, which is usually what physicists ask me, why didn't you draw with Schrodinger's wave collapse? Which I probably should have, but it's again really inconsistent. It's really difficult to make a gradient with. So I drew it with Heisenberg's uncertainty principle. I'll also say real quick, the other reason is because I thought it was interesting to talk about the conversation that was happening around this quantum physics thought experiment. So it's Schrodinger's cat, but he didn't get to this concept on his own or in a vacuum. This was a really hot debate about what's happening in the quantum world. And I liked having more than one name in here.
So this image is black, and there's a, it's just etched. So most of the imagery is just white on black, very fine. It's a tufty little cat. It looks like a kitten, really, kind of thick paws and it's sort of big ears, you know, for the face, with green eyes. And then there's another version of the cat lying down, you know, asleep or dead or whatever, on the ground in the background, made of numbers as well and formula. Looks like Greek lettering. There is some scientific equipment, a flask. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that is, projector. So tell us, how did you decide to, you know, make two versions of a cat? And tell us about the principle.
So I was really hoping we talk about this. This was my very first scientific numberism drawing. And at this point, it was just a fun idea to draw Schrodinger's cat with information that pertained to it. It's a very nerdy, fun thing to do. What I didn't expect was that drawing it would actually help me understand the concept better. So I'd learned about it, but it's really heady stuff. It's complicated to get your head around and to remember it. And so I'd study it, I'd go away, I'd come back, and I'd forget something. But I found that when I drew this, I retained the knowledge better than I ever had. And so this is when it first started becoming a learning technique for me to use number to study science. So, okay, so Schrodinger's cat, you see in this box. One second.
We're inside a box, right?
Right. So we're seeing two potentially collapsed states of everything within this closed system if it were following the rules of quantum physics. And so you have one cat that is both alive and dead at the same time. You also have the vial of sodium dioxide, full and broken, and the hammer at rest and in motion. And this is emitting, it's emitting radiation, very low levels of radiation. So low that over an hour, there's, I think, a 50% chance that it would be detected by this Geiger counter here. If the Geiger counter detects the radiation, it sets off this hammer, breaks the vial, and kills the kitty cat. So that's Schrodinger's cat. So until measured, it is in a superposition of all possible cat states, and then it's collapsed into one. I thought this was a really fun experiment and something that's really inherently creative. So at this point, I was actively arguing against the idea that science is for non-creative people and it's just very linear and hard, right? And that creative people don't have a place in science. I thought this was a really great argument against that because this is an extremely creative, fun idea that I think speaks to artists and has created this wealth of ideas in the creative community. So all of the science fiction movies you've seen and stories that talk about parallel dimensions came from physicists arguing about the nature of the world. Because this led to Hugh Everett's theory of parallel worlds, so it's the many worlds theory, and so you'd think universe A, you have the living cat, universe B, you have the dead cat. So I was in love with it. I loved that this wonderful dynamic argument about the nature of the world and physics just kept giving us creative fodder. And it seemed like a really great thing to point at, that science is a place where creative minds play. And so therefore, creative people naturally have a place in it. And I wanted to push more creative types to go study science and get involved.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Sienna from Sienna Art Studios at Workshop St. John in St. John's. And her work is available at siennaartstudios.com, and she's also big on patreon.com under numberism. Sienna, you got a commission from a doctor in Texas who, well, the result was this amazing, very dark image of two arms and hands. The hands are more illuminated, coming out of the darkness and playing the piano. One, the left hand is pressing on the keys, the right hand is in the air, so about to come down. And then it's an anatomical drawing, so we see the bones and the ligaments and muscles, and they're again filled with formulae, or as are the keys on the keyboard. Tell us, who is this doctor and what did they ask for?
So this commission is for a hand surgeon that I met at a Comic-Con in Chicago, actually. They just asked me to draw an anatomical hand. This piece took 3 years to make. I spent a year studying hands visually, so I drew about 50 drawings of hands, and I spent a year researching the science. So to study this piece, I did an online course on anatomy and physiology, the first part of it, so on musculoskeletal. I took an anatomy of the upper limb, and I read lots of research papers to create this piece. I love hands. I think they're extraordinary. They're magical for an artist. I think they communicate so much. And so this was a high task for me. I wanted to get it perfect, especially because she's a hand surgeon and a pianist. And so it had to be just right. So my model is Julia Lee. She's a classically trained pianist who I actually met at All Classical Radio. And I had her model so that I knew I had the pose just right, because I'm not a pianist, I don't know. In fact, my first drawing of it, she told me was very wrong and showed very bad form. And the equations that I'm drawing with here explain the precise parameters of the physical properties of hands that you'd want to have for optimal functioning of the hands. And so you have things such as active range of motion for the joints. I have Young's modulus and elasticity for the tendons. I have the toughness of bone. I have a chemical formula for hydroxyapatite. And then I also have anatomical names for where everything is. So what the name of the muscle, what it's innervated by, that sort of thing. This piece took me 2 months to draw, and I actually drew it twice because I was trying to achieve perfection, which I think I actually did for what I was going for. So I drew this, and then I made some slight changes and then drew it again. So I do actually have this original still available. Of note, I have the supinator revealed. It's this muscle here in the forearm, because the top arm is in the act of supinating.
Twisting your arm.
Yeah, so you have flexion and extension, and then you have supinating and pronating. And she's in the act of supinating, and so I thought it'd be beautiful to include the muscle that's responsible for that. And conceptually, I really loved it, but aesthetically, it broke the line. And so I removed it. And so in the final piece and in the prints that I have available online, it doesn't have that muscle.
And what's written on the keyboard?
That's the 12th root of 2. It's used to establish the Western tuning system. I also have the touch weight of a piano, which is 50 grams. The description for this piece is huge. And beyond that, I also have hidden words that I hide in there. And so anyone who loves detail and precision could spend so many hours just looking at my piece and finding more and more and more that I put in there.
Did you etch this piece at this scale, right? This is the original. It's like, it's maybe 3 or 4 feet diagonally. So, but some of these marks are just absolutely tiny.
Mm-hmm. So I use hair-thin blades to make these really fine marks. And they are very, very small. I used to use a magnifying glass to draw them. I don't actually need it anymore. It's kind of like muscle memory. I've tried to work larger in the past with large, big numbers, but it's really unnatural to me. My body wants to draw really tiny, precise things. This is the original. I actually drew this piece twice. So it's a 24 by 36 etching, which is one of the bigger pieces I've ever done. This one I love, because I call it the journey piece. It has history of my choices in here. I made my choices here about the final composition and then did it again. Here, if you look closely, I drew the piano once, the dissipation, and I didn't like it, so I painted over it and etched it again. And so if you look at it from the angle, you can see these like ghost memories of my previous numbers. So for me, I love this because it's a journey of discovery, and it shows the choices I made to come to the piece. As an artist, I love that when you get to go to a museum and see the mind of the artist and the steps they took to create something.
Right next to it is Breathe, which is 5 conifers against the sky. Below them, again, we see a root system, and that's on a yellow background. But you told me it also represents the like an EKG, a heart?
An EEG.
Oh, sorry,
an EEG. Electroencephalogram.
Just tell us what that is.
So this piece is really wonderful and shows you where my work is going for the next several years. So my work is becoming more and more about mental health. So it helps people address mental health issues, which we all have at some point. And I think most of us are struggling with, especially this year with COVID, with isolation. COVID is perfect for creating symptoms of depression. You have isolation, which is a symptom of depression. I think a lot of people who have never experienced depression before are experiencing it for the first time during COVID. The inability to see their friends and loved ones, to touch each other, which is hugely important for self-care and mental health well-being. The inability to do any of the things you used to do to take care of yourself, like go to the gym or even socialize, those little things are creating psychologically damaging stimulation and causing depression and anxiety in a lot of people who would otherwise be healthy. And so unfortunately, a lot of people are facing this year unprepared with how to survive it. And so I've been wanting to share more of my information with people so that they know how to reach out and so that they can even just talk about it and feel more comfortable traversing the question. So Breathe was the first piece I did about mental health, and I did it for a lecture series I did at Northwest Noggin, which is a neurology outreach group in Portland. They're amazing. I recommend checking them out. I was paired with neuroscientist Brittany Alperin, and we did a small research experiment about self-care skills to show people the efficacy of using self-care skills. So I did a 2-month mindfulness-based stress reduction therapy program, and we recorded my brain in EEG before and after the treatment to see if there was any notable neurological improvement from this experience, which there was. I had an 80% improvement in my alpha asymmetry score, which shows an improvement in an affect. And so you have a positive or negative affect. And that's a significant change. We also did a battery of other tests, like the Beck Depression Inventory, and I was self-reporting no longer being in a depressive episode, where I was when I started. So it was, for me personally, extremely validating to show me with real hard data that self-care was working. Anyway, so we took this research we found, and I took the data and drew this piece called Breathe. In my research, I found the most powerful things that helped me was mindfulness, meditation, and access to nature, all of which have a lot of science behind it that prove it works. Now, the trees, why you see trees here is because they found that being in nature is extremely powerful for our mental health. So this, like forest bathing, has the chemical formula for alpha pinene, which decreases cortisol levels when you breathe it in. And for me, that was hugely powerful because I have depression and anxiety, and it reduces stress. And so it's called comorbidity. It's very common. So we have the chemical formula for alpha pinene. I also have the change in my alpha asymmetry score here. And the shape you see is actually taken from the EEG reading of my brain after the treatment. And it's also drawn with the Hertz frequencies of an alpha wave, which is between 8 and 12 Hertz. And alpha is what you'd see in someone who's resting or meditating. So this is a representation of my brain at rest. The lecture was amazing. So we did the lecture. We did 3 lectures with Northwest Noggin. There were so many people who shared with me their personal experience and opened up, which is the point of this, right? It's to talk about mental health and to share our experience and help each other through it. And so that sort of motivated and inspired me to continue on this path, and it's what I'll be doing for the next several years. This piece I created, it's another commission. It was commissioned by a patron. I will note most of my originals end up going to my patrons, actually.
This piece is called Hope. It's very dark. There's a face appearing, and then the hands are holding up. It's almost as though they're holding a sort of invisible globe, and they're much brighter. They're in the foreground, and they're lit up. And then coming out of the hands is a series of sort of golden letters in a swirly, kind of almost like smoke or a serpentine form. What are the formula that you're using here to symbolize hope?
So this piece is different from my others in that there isn't any math or science in this piece. This piece is drawn with self-care skills. So the image that you see here is inspired by the feeling of being in a dark place, being in a deep depressive episode, and finding that one spark of light that you can hold on to pull yourself out of it. That's what's in her hands, is the light. The hope that we have here is work. So self-care is work. When you have the skills, you have to do them to be able to come out of a depressive episode. And it's extremely difficult, I have to say, especially when you're deep in depression. It uses tremendous strength and courage and self-love to do it. And this piece is a celebration of that and to show that it can bring you out of the darkness. The light that you see going through her arms is meant to represent that it's going inward and outward. And so it's the idea of being your own light.
Most of your works have a like notes with them, just explaining what the formula are, what the... So on the back of Hope, there are a list of skills like therapy, meditation, breathing exercises, loving kindness. There's like 20 of these things. How do you think someone can relate to this if they've never had depression, but it's 2020 and they're feeling a bit strange?
That's a really good question. I hadn't thought about that question. So these are actionable things you can do when you're feeling unwell. It's similar to if you twisted your ankle and I would tell you to rice it. Rest it, ice it, compress it, and elevate it. And so there are specific things you can do to decrease your suffering and improve your well-being. And these things are skills that I have used that I found to decrease my suffering and increase and improve my well-being. But this is meant to be a jumping off point to see what has worked for me and many other people and to see if it inspires new ideas that work for them. Many of the things on here isn't applicable for everybody or appropriate for everyone, but it's meant to show that there are things that work. So the cool compress you mentioned, I wanted to put a note on this. The cool compress is to trigger the diver's reflex, the diver's response. So when you're having an anxiety attack, which is a really horrible experience, your body is kind of going haywire. You have no ability to have, they call it top-down regulation of your emotions, because bottom-up is driving you, right? So your heart is going like crazy. You're dealing with a lot of physiological symptoms of an anxiety attack. You're not breathing properly. And when you put a cool compress on your face, it triggers the diver's response, and that slows your heart rate, and it slows your breathing. And it gives you the opportunity for your body to rest so that you can have top-down regulation, so you can think clearly. And then ask yourself, what can I do to help myself right now? 10% of the profits from this piece goes to the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention as well. And many of my pieces will be focusing on that.
I like this art because it has so much meaning. So much of art, you know, the meaning is left up to the viewer. But in your case, you're a bit more pushing the viewer, which I find it very interesting. Do you think in the future you'll be mining this particular type of numberism or style, or do you think you'll go in a different direction?
I think my work is in a bit of a transition right now. Originally, it was about simply discovering scientific concepts and learning, and now I'm focused more on how I can use that to help people and facilitate something in my community. So this year, I have focused on actually going to school instead of just being self-taught. So during COVID gave me the opportunity of time, and so I've started going to school. I think I will continue to be doing numberism for the rest of my life. My hope is to make them larger scale and more accessible, and to make science and scientific resources and mental health resources more accessible to people. So I will be doing fewer conventions and fewer shows and focusing more on community and sustainability for myself and for my work.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Sienna from Sienna Art Studios. She's based at Workshop St. John, which used to be called Cathedral Park Place. And her art can be seen at siennaartstudios.com and under numberism at patreon.com. Thanks so much for doing Art Focus with a mask on.
Thank you so much for having me. This was wonderful.
Andy Warhol loves a scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all. Thank you.
revois la ville en fête et en délire, suffoquant sous le soleil et sous la joie. Et j'entends dans la musique les cris, les rires qui éclatent et rebondissent autour de moi. Et perdu parmi ces gens qui me bousculent, étourdi, désemparé, je reste là. Quand soudain je me retourne, il se recule, et la foule vient me jeter entre ses bras. Emporté par la foule qui nous entraîne, écrasés l'un contre l'autre, nous ne formons qu'un seul corps. Et le flot sans effort nous pousse enchaîner l'un et l'autre, et nous laisse tous deux épanouis, enivrés et heureux. Entraînés par la foule qui s'élance et qui danse une folle farandole, nos deux mains restent soudées. Et parfois soulevés, nos deux corps enlacés s'envolent et retombent tous deux épanouis, enivrés et heureux. Et la joie qu'elle a poussée par son sourire me transperce et rejaillit au fond de moi. Mais soudain, je pousse un cri parmi les rires quand la foule vient l'arracher d'entre mes bras. Emportée par la foule qui nous traîne, nous entraîne, nous éloigne l'un de l'autre, je lutte et je me débat. Mais le son de ma voix s'étouffe dans le rire des autres, et je crie de douleur, de fureur et de rage, et je pleure. Et traînée par la foule qui s'élance et qui danse une folle farandole, je suis emportée au loin, et je crispe mes poings maudissant la foule qui me vole, l'homme qu'elle m'avait donné que je n'ai jamais retrouvé.
Estás sintonizando KDOO Portland.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy martes 29 de diciembre del 2020.